Hello again, you lovely yam-yams. Welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 3rd of July, 2024.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have myself, Nathan, Ian, Christine, Angela, Liz, Pete, Helen, Mina, Simon, and Soundings contributor, Roger Brooks. In this week's edition, we have the latest Beacon update from Helen, have a pop music quiz with Soundings recorder Roger Brooks. From all the details about the Dudley Grand Prix, we have the latest news for the Black Country. After our summer sojourn a few weeks ago, will July be bringing it back? We hear from Mina, who has the latest weather forecast for the week ahead. And with some teams at the Euros faltering, others spluttering, and one or two purring, we take you on a nostalgic journey from the Black Country to Bilbao that will have you doing the tippy-tappy tiki-taka to El Bombin, the bowler, a lad from Volvo. Local news to start though with Ian, Christine and Liz, but first, Angela.
Work is on track to complete two new railway stations in the Black Country after a contractor stepped in to save the multi-million pound scheme. Vital ground clearing and reclamation digging is coming to an end at the sites in James Bridge in Darlaston and off Bilston Street in Willenhall as part of the £55 million project to improve public transportation links and help regenerate both towns. Passenger transport chiefs at Transport for West Midlands and the West Midlands Combined Authority are aiming to get the stations open and ready for passengers by the winter 2025-26. The scheme was thrown into doubt when the original contractor, Buckingham Group, filed for administration back in August last year, resulting in groundwork on both sites grinding to a halt. Since then, new contractor Kier Transportation has been ploughing away on preparation work on the sites, which will serve the Walsall-Wolverhampton line. A Transport for West Midlands spokesperson said, "Since the appointment of Kier and the remobilisation of the project, significant progress has been made on the remediation of the old industrial land surrounding the stations. Through the construction of the new stations, 3.5 acres of brownfield land will be remediated, which will bring significant benefits to the area. With this extensive remediation and preparation work completed, residents can expect to see platforms taking shape over the coming weeks and months. The opening of new stations and restoring passenger rail services to Darlaston and Willenhall will be transformative for the area for generations to come, better connecting residents with direct links to Walsall, Wolverhampton and Birmingham. It will also attract investment and assist in regenerating this part of the Black Country. That is why, despite the difficulties last year, the West Midlands Combined Authority and partners remain committed to delivery of these two stations at the earliest opportunity. Two trains per hour will call at the new stations, including an hourly service between Walsall and Wolverhampton and an hourly service between Birmingham New Street and Wolverhampton. A new fast service planned on the Shrewsbury-Birmingham timetable is also scheduled to stop at the stations. On completion, the stations off Cemetery Road, James Bridge in Darlaston and off Bilston Street in Rose Hill, Willenhall will provide the towns with a passenger rail link for the first time in more than 50 years. Both towns lost their stations in 1965 under the infamous Beeching Railway cuts, while the track remained intact for three trains. In the 1960s, more than 4,000 miles of rail lines were axed on cost and efficiency grounds. Transport bosses have also set aside £1 million in funding to develop plans for three more railway stations, including Tetnall in Wolverhampton, between Claregate and Pendeford on the Wolverhampton to Shrewsbury line, in Castle Bromwich in Birmingham, and in Binley in Coventry.
And on the buses, you may recall, Transport for West Midlands, TFWM, announced in mid-June that day and season bus tickets were set to rise by an average of 6% as the industry struggles to meet the ongoing challenges of rising costs. That hike came into force on Sunday morning. However, the single fare remains set at £2, under the cap agreed with the Department for Transport, which currently remains in place until the end of 2024. The increases were agreed by all operators in the TFWM area, but the Transport Authority, part of West Midlands Combined Authority, said they still offer great value to passengers and remained lower than Liverpool and Greater Manchester. A selection of new prices have been listed, so let's head over to Ian, who can tell us more.
Adult, one-day fare, £4.80. One-week fare, £18. Four-week fare, £64. Monthly fare, £59. Child, one-day fare, £2.40. One-week fare, £9. Four-week fare, £32. Monthly fare, £30.
A spokesperson for the TFWM said the increase ensures that the region's bus network remains operating at current levels, while an ongoing review launched by TFWM last year looks at the long-term sustainability of bus services. The review will be reported back to the West Midlands Combined Authority, WMCA, board next month. Pete Bond, Director of Integrated Transport Services with TFWM, said, "Despite many challenges, we have worked with bus operators since the pandemic to keep fare rises to an absolute minimum. And even though they are rising, fares remain great value for the many people who rely on buses day in and day out. At the same time, we are working on plans to secure the long-term future of our bus network and will announce the results of the review in the coming weeks."
And access to our buses and streets will be disrupted in Dudley next week as part of this year's Black Country Festival, with Dudley Borough welcoming British Cycling's Dudley Grand Prix racing event for a second year running on Friday, the 12th of July. The event is funded by the UK Government, West Midlands Combined Authority and the Commonwealth Games Legacy Enhancement Fund. The following roads will be closed and parking prohibited from 1 minute past midnight to 23:59 on 12th of July.
The Broadway to Tower Street, Paganel Drive from Gervais Drive to the Broadway, Priory Road from the Broadway to Priory Street, Ednam Road from the Broadway to St James's Road, St James's Road from Trinity Road to Priory Street, Parsons Street from Wolverhampton Street to Ednam Road, Wolverhampton Street from Trinity Road to Priory Street, the Innage from Cross Street to Wolverhampton Street. Access to car parks will be maintained. Priory Street from Priory Road to Wolverhampton Street, Court Passage from Priory Street to Stone Street, Stone Street from High Street to Priory Street, New Street from Priory Street to Tower Street, Tower Street from Stone Street to New Street, Wolverhampton Street from the access to the Trident Centre car park to Priory Street.
There will be no home deliveries permitted.
The one-way orders on Castle Street and New Street will be reversed and a one-way orders put in place on the Broadway and Union Street to enable the buses to operate during the Cycle Grand Prix. the Broadway one way from Tower Street to Castle Street, Castle Street one way from Castle Hill to New Street, New Street one way from Castle Street to Tower Street, Union Street one way from High Street to King Street.
All parking, disabled and taxi bays will be suspended in Castle Street and New Street during 12th of July. The following council-run car parks in the town centre will be free of charge from 6pm on the 12th of July to 7am on 13th of July 2024. Stafford Street, Tower Street, Wolverhampton Street and Pitfield Street. Access to buses during 12th of July. Temporary bus stops will be provided on Castle Street and New Street. The existing stops on Tower Street will remain. Transport for West Midlands, National Express and Diamond bus staff will be on hand to advise.
Up next, we hear from Helen, who, as usual, has our latest Beacon update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from Beacon here with your weekly update. Now, if you visited one of our shops recently, I'd love to know if you found one of our eye-catching bookmarks yet. Hidden inside our books for sale at our charity shops across the region, these little gems are here to remind you to look after your eyes. So if you can read, you can come visit us, pick up a book and see if you can find one of our special bookmarks. Now, next this week, have you been staying safe in the warm weather? Well, with temperatures on the rise, it is important to take extra care. So here are some of our tips to keep cool and stay safe if it gets pretty warm again. So first up, stay hydrated. Yep, drink plenty of water. Next, apply sunscreen regularly. Then, keep your home cool, close curtains and use fans. Wear light, breathable clothing and a hat outdoors. Avoid strenuous activities during peak heat hours, and that's between 11am and 3pm. Now, remember, we are here for you. If you or someone you know needs extra support during any hot days, don't hesitate to get in touch with a Beacon Centre to see if we can help. Now, do you have any unneeded low vision aids or adaptions? Donate them to Beacon's Low Vision Hub. Your generous donation can make a huge difference in the lives of those with sight loss. If you have items like magnifiers, talking clocks, or other adaptive tools, we can help give them a new home. Get in touch with us at 01902 880111 or email us at inquiries@beaconvision.org to arrange your donation. You can also pop in to see us. We'd absolutely love to thank you in person. Now, there's been some exciting progress at the Beacon Centre's Nature Hub Accessible Community Garden. Our amazing volunteers have built three large planters and our members will be helping to fill them with beautiful plants over the coming weeks. Once complete, we'll add audio QR codes so everyone can learn about the flowers in each planter. Stay tuned for more updates.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Next up, we have another block of local news. And up first, we hear from Christine.
A sunflower garden created in memory of a young King's Winford woman who passed away from leukaemia has wowed the crowds and impressed the judges at BBC Gardeners World Live for a second year running. Beth's Sunflowers was awarded a prestigious silver award from the judging panel and was then further honoured with the People's Choice Best Beautiful Border 2024 award voted by the public. Andrea Childs, an ambassador for Cure Leukemia, who lost her 20-year-old daughter Beth to the disease 6 years ago, created the poignant tribute garden after making her debut at the show last year when she won the Community Endeavour Award. This time around, Andrea teamed up with Jack Moody Group and Hollybush Gardens Centre and Aquaria to create the garden in Beth's honour as a way of celebrating her life and legacy and raising funds for blood cancer charities. Andrea, aged 56, created the charity Beth's Sunflowers after she lost her battle with acute lymphoblastic leukaemia in 2018, just 2 months before her 21st birthday. Sunflowers, Beth's favourite flower, became a symbol of hope for Andrea. The following year, in 2019, another leukemia mum grew sunflowers in her garden and gifted Andrea some seeds to grow the following year, sparking a tradition of growing and selling sunflowers to support Cure Leukemia and other blood cancer charities like A Gift to Lift. This in turn led to Andrea's first outing at BBC Gardeners World with Beth's sunflowers. Returning this year for a second year, she sought community support through social media, asking for plant donations for her border garden.
And Jack Moody Group responded enthusiastically, offering expertise and resources, leading to a collaborative planning process that brought a garden of treasured memories to life at the NEC show, running from June the 13th to the 16th, which attracted more than 90,000 visitors. Jack Moody Nursery planted more than 100 sunflower seeds provided by Andrea, complemented by a thoughtfully curated selection of plants, each symbolising an aspect of Beth's personality. The garden tells the story of Beth's short life, with stepping stones representing her milestones and predominantly pink flowers symbolising beauty, strength, ambition, friendship, in addition to her sunflowers denoting her legacy, with her granddad's bench also included, evoking treasured family memories. Andrea also worked with local primary schools, including the Glyn Kings Winford, Maidensbridge in Wallheath, and St James C of E in Wollaston, Cotwall End in Sedgley, with children tasked with painting images of flowers to go inside a charity marquee next to the garden. The project also included a pub sunflower growing competition at the Park Tavern, Kings Winford, which has raised around £500. As well as proving a beautiful, award-winning display, the garden was also an opportunity to share Beth's story and raise funds for awareness of blood cancer, with this year's initiative raising more than £5,000 for charities. Kate Moody, Managing Director at Jack Moody Group, said, "We are honoured to support such a meaningful cause and look forward to future collaborations that continue to inspire and make a difference." Beth's mum, Andrea, said, "We were all thrilled with the judges' silver award, but to hear the public's comments on our garden over the 4 days of the show and repeatedly be told how beautiful it was meant everything to us. To win the public vote was the icing on the cake and a fitting tribute to Beth." Andrea's charity endeavours have also seen her recognised in the West Midlands Lieutenancy 54 WM50 campaign, which saw 50 volunteers from each borough in the region invited to a ceremony hosted by the King's representative, the Lord Lieutenant John Crabtree OBE, on June 23rd at Birmingham University Great Hall.
And talking of accolades and beautiful green spaces, a retired soil scientist from Dudley who has transformed an overgrown community garden in Briley Hill has told of his joy at being awarded a BEM in the King's Birthday Honours List. Dr. Kenneth Smith has been recognised as a medalist of the Order of the British Empire for his services to the community. The 73-year-old has spent the last decade transforming a disused parcel of land in Briley Hill into a thriving community hub. The land, located off Bull Street on the Hawbush Estate, was formerly home to an urban farm created to provide a much-needed green space in an area with high levels of deprivation. By 2014, it had become overgrown, neglected and disused. But Ken, as he's known, turned the Hawbush Community Gardens site into a green oasis, which is now used regularly by locals and community groups engaged in produce growing, gardening, art and crafts, and wildlife conservation. He was originally a volunteer with the Briley Hill Project, which hosted a food bank, and he said, "I just felt we should try and get more fresh produce, and I found out Hawbush Community Gardens was available, but it was completely derelict. It was like a jungle." Ken has devoted 9 years to painstakingly transforming the site, which now hosts family days and other community events. Produce grown there is also donated to the Black Country Food Bank, enabling families in need to pick up fresh vegetables as well as the mostly packaged food they receive in donations. Ken has also devoted his time to working with a variety of groups and individuals, including young offenders, primary school children, and people with mental health conditions who have benefited from spending time outdoors in nature. The site now comprises 26 allotment plots, but Ken said, "It's much more than that. It's a charity and we're entirely run by volunteers, and we have a large number of groups involved, and we have people come through social prescribing. We also have people come for community reparation, and you often find they're young people who've made a wrong choice. It's a privilege to be able to help them." Ken, who admits to spending many hours at the site, has also helped to develop a seed-to-plate initiative, giving local school children an insight into where their food comes from and allowing them to experience the joy of growing their own vegetables and creating dishes from the ingredients. He said of his royal award, "It's really lovely. Like a lot of volunteers, I don't do it for any recognition. It keeps me fit and it makes you feel happy that you're doing something that's worthwhile. It's lovely to have that recognition though. It's wonderful that somebody actually thought you're worth nominating. It's a great honour." It's not the first royal seal of approval for the work going on at the site. In 2022, the project volunteers were awarded the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service. To find out more, check out website hawbushgardens.co.uk or email hawbushgardens@gmail.com.
Now, if the weather remembers it's supposed to be summer and you have a moment to spare, how do breathtaking fields of confetti flowers sound? Worth a visit? Well, you best get your skates on, as these stunning scenes, that are just a short drive from the Black Country, will only be open for people to visit for just 10 days this summer. The Real Flower Petal Confetti Company at Wyke Manor Estate offers the public a rare chance to see its fields in full bloom for a very limited period each summer. This year, it will only be open for 10 days and tickets must be booked in advance. Located near Wick and Pershore, the farm is filled with spectacular delphinium flowers in various colours. Tickets have gone on sale by the Real Flower Petal Confetti Company for its opening from Friday, June the 28th to Sunday, July the 7th. A spokesperson from the Real Flower Petal Confetti Company previously told local media outlets, "We are Worcestershire arable farmers that also grow flowers to make wedding confetti. We open our flower field to the public for just 10 days in midsummer. It is a spectacular sight and a magical experience to wander around an enormous field of tall and colourful flowers. We are a proper little hidden gem and definitely one for your bucket list." Organisers recommend setting aside 2 hours for a visit to fully appreciate the beauty of the field and soak up the scenery. If you're interested, remember that time is of the essence to see them this year. Throughout the year, the farm crafts eco-friendly biodegradable flower petal confetti available for purchase online. Its confetti field visits are a highlight of the summer in the Midlands, drawing visitors who can also pick up bunches of flowers to take home. A local resident from Sandwell in the Black Country was enchanted by the sight, calling it a field of paradise and praising the exquisite blooms and a wonderful day out for the family. "Great to see kids running and being photographed amidst the myriads of delphiniums." A previous visitor left a glowing review on TripAdvisor. "The fields are beautiful and perfect for photography, family photo shoots. It was well organized with parking and they have portable toilets and a stool. The ground is not smooth, so wheelchair access could be difficult. Some fields are one colour of flower and others are multicoloured. Everyone there was polite and considerate of other photo shoots."
So, where can you find the confetti flower fields? The Real Flower Petal Confetti Company is at Wyke Manor in the village of Wyke near Pershore in Worcestershire. To find it, simply use the postcode WR103NZ. How to get tickets? The fields will be accessible each day from 10 a.m. with the last admission at 3:45 p.m. before closing at 5. This is a ticketed event with specific time slots, so advance booking is necessary. Tickets can be booked through the farm's website. A two-hour slot to explore the confetti flower fields costs £9 per person, but entry is free for children under five. All spots must be booked in advance via the farm's website. Are dogs permitted at the confetti flower fields? Unfortunately, dogs are not allowed into the fields, and the company has requested that visitors refrain from bringing their pets to the farm. Is parking available, and are there toilets at the confetti farm in Pershaw? Complimentary parking is provided at an on-site car park. In addition to portable toilets, there are two disabled toilets and a baby changing tent equipped with two trestle tables. Sanitizer is available, but there is no running water on site as this is a pop-up event. Are refreshments available at the Wick Confetti Flower Fields near Pershaw, or can I bring a picnic? The setting is a functional farm, but there's a tent set up offering tea, other beverages and cake. Visitors are encouraged to bring their own picnics and can relax around the field while taking in the view. In past years, hay bales have been provided for seating. Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition. Take it away, Roger.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Roger with quiz time again. My name is Roger Brooks, and this one's about popular music. Question one. Who sang Baker Street? Da, 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 da. That one, Baker Street. Who was the singer of that song? Question two. A band called the Honeybus sang a song called I Can't Let Maggie Go. She flies like a bird in the sky, etc., etc. It was used in an advert for a food product. What was that food product? Question three. Who had the hit with Wichita Lineman? I am the lineman for the county. Who was the hit singer of that song? Question four is in two parts. Who was the oldest and who was the youngest of the four Beatles? We're talking about the classic lineup, John, Paul, George and Ringo. Which of those was the oldest and which was the youngest? Question five. What was the biopic about singer Elton John called? What was the name of the film about Elton John? Question six. Who had a hit with the song I Just Called to Say I Love You? Question seven. Which quaint combo had a hit with Winchester Cathedral? Da, 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 da. Who had a hit with that? Question 8. You'll never know how much I really love you. Listen, do you want to know a secret? That was a Beatles song, but who had the hit single with it? Question 9. Who was the lead singer with the Hollies? They had a variety after he left. But who was the mainstay and the singer on all their hits? Question 10. Who was the actor who had a surprise hit with a very long and strangely lyriced record called MacArthur Park? Question 11. What was the Beatles' first number one single? Beatles' first number one single. And finally, question 12. Tell me something odd about the song Something, which was Beatles' single, Something in the Way She Moves, etc. That's our 12 pop questions. I hope you got the answers.
TNS Soundings.
More local news to follow, but now
we have another bulletin of practical information and sight loss tips from Pete.
If you're struggling with reading and need a magnifier, have you ever considered a video magnifier, or sometimes known as a digital magnifier? Well, Beacon have a range of video magnifiers that you can come in and try. Now, a video magnifier, you can increase or decrease the magnification, so you can turn it up a bit or you can turn it up quite a lot to help you read. You can change contrast settings on a video magnifier, so you can look at something in true colour, or you could change the contrast to black on white, or white on black, or yellow on black, or black on yellow. It's whatever works best for you, so there's a range of combinations there that you can try to find the right one. You can also freeze images on a video magnifier. So let's say there's something in your fridge, piece of some food. You could take a little picture, because the angle's a bit difficult to read of it, and then bring the magnifier away and then zoom it up. So if it's something like the sell-by dates or ingredients on food, you can read it comfortably there. So video magnifiers range from small handheld magnifiers you can sit comfortably in an armchair to read with, up to medium-sized ones, which are about the size of laptops, and then there's desktop magnifiers with big, large 24-inch screens, which really make magnification strong. So, if you would like to try a video magnifier to see if that would help you, you're very welcome to. Just call Beacon's Sight Loss Advisors for an appointment. And remember, bring something you struggle to read with you. So if you'd like to try a video magnifier, give us a call on 01902 880 111 and ask for a sight loss advisor. 01902 880 111.
Now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, Mina here. Hope you're all keeping well. Welcome to July, a month of glorious sunny days and warm summer nights. Well, perhaps the weather is a little stuck in April at the moment, but hopefully it will catch up soon, as it does look as though this unsettled spell is set to continue, with plenty of prolonged showers forecast for the week ahead. Temperatures should also continue to feel a little on the cool side. In result, UV levels will actually fluctuate between low and medium. The sunrise and sunset times are 4:55 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:30 p.m. for the sunset. Friday, 5th of July, is looking wet and dreary. With plenty of rainfall, forecast and gentle breeze, it will feel like anything but summer, with temperatures right down on those mid-20s we had just a few weeks ago at 13 degrees in the morning. You may even need those winter warmers on. Things should pick up as we get into the afternoon, with an average of 16 degrees expected across the region. Moving on into the weekend, and we should see an initial dry start to both Saturday the 6th of July and Sunday 7th of July. But with a breeze coming in more from the west, there is a chance that it will bring some light rain into the region during the afternoon. Temperatures should reflect this and will remain around 17 degrees. And if you were hoping that the tennis at Wimbledon may bring about a change in fortune with the weather, then it's game set and match to the reigning champion. Did you get it? Reigning, as in reigning? I'll get my coat and Bolly perhaps. As from Monday, 8th of July, right through to Thursday, 7th of July, we've got an unsettled spell of persistent light rain showers with some sunny intervals breaking through. The breeze will remain, but may start to drift up from the southwest. So despite the light rain and drizzle, temperatures may just pick up a touch and hit 20 or even 21 degrees. With Thursday looking like it may provide us with the brighter, drier day. So the end of the week may be a little nugget of something to look forward to. Do take care, have a wonderful week ahead, and enjoy the weather.
Now then, have we all recovered from the anguish and euphoria from Sunday's football? The Black Country's very own Jude Bellingham. I have saved England thanks to a moment of sheer individual brilliance. But any fans transfixed by the silky smooth sophisticated football of Spain later in the evening may well be taken aback to learn those superstars' sublime skills are down to one man from Wolverhampton. Introducing memories of football legend Fred Pentland, an England superstar and hero to fans in one corner of Spain.
Yes, take a Bilbao, Fred Pentland, a soccer supremo who ruled before false nines, holding midfielders and wingbacks. Back then, top players were too sick as a parrot to post about social injustice. He was the man who puts the "all right, our kid" into Ole football, introducing the intricate short keep the ball on the ground style that has become Spain's trademark. And Fred, whose own career began with such modest Black Country outfits as Avondale Juniors and Willenhall Swifts, is still regarded as one of the nation's greatest managers. He was the first to guide a Spanish club to the league and cup double. And he achieved the great feat twice with Atletico Bilbao in 1930 and 31, as well as winning four successive Copa del Rey cup finals, something that has never been equaled. Fred was also the architect of mighty Barcelona's biggest ever defeat, a 12-1 1931 thrashing to Bilbao. Make no mistake, Fred was much more than the Mourinho of his time, a time of Brill cream, beef tea, and half-time oranges. He was a tactical genius when there weren't many tactics. Forget the tried and trusted 4-4-2 formation, Fred shocked the world by unveiling his 2-5-3 style. But then, Fred's approach was always unconventional. He spent his first training session with the Bilbao squad, teaching the correct way to tie bootlaces, telling the mystified players, "Get the basics right and the rest will follow." He changed the way top-flight football was played, although England's top brass was slow in embracing the polished Pentland style. Our national team paid for not heeding Fred's words. He was one of the coaches when Spain beat the Three Lions 4-3 in 1929, England's first ever loss to a side from outside the UK. On its website, Athletic Bilbao still speak of Frederick Beaconsfield Pentland with reverence. Its website tells of the debt owed to Mr. Pentland. It was not just the silverware that turned Fred Pentland into an athletic legend. He ushered in professional standards, changed training habits and introduced tactics based on intensity, possession and wing play that have since become synonymous with Athletic Club. What's more, Pentland did all this with style and personality, his sense of humour and humanity ensuring that even a century later, he remains a revered figure. He was no nonsense. In magazine These Football Times, Jack Rodway wrote, "If you couldn't play the way he wanted you to, you'd be shown the exit." Not that this was a bad thing. He was ahead of his time and Spain had never seen a manager like Pentland before. In his time, managers had yet to become fashion icons. They did not parade around the technical area in waistcoats and designer suits. Fred paced the touchline with a fat cigar permanently clamped between his teeth and a bowler hat perched on his head. That trademark look earned the ashen-faced boss the nickname El Bombín, the bowler. And that very English hat quickly became a club symbol. In a strange ritual, Fred allowed his players to joyously stamp on it after any memorable victory. In the street, he strolled, sporting that ever-present bowler and twirling a brolly. Fred fitted Bilbao fans' vision of a successful English gent, and he embraced the role.
Yet his is an unlikely international football fairy tale that grew from humble beginnings. Fred, one of seven children, was born in Lord Street, Wolverhampton, on July 29, 1883, to Irish parents. Dad, Joseph, worked as a printer. He worked in a Birmingham gun-making factory before being signed at just 17 by second division outfit Small Heath, who would later become Birmingham City. At Small Heath, Fred's contribution was less than small, his impact insignificant. He made only one first-team appearance as inside forward in a losing FA Cup tie and was sold to Blackpool in 1903. It would be the first of many moves for the local lad. After only eight appearances, Fred shifted from the seaside club to Blackburn Rovers and really found his footballing feet. Rovers fans loved Fred, who played 51 times for the outfit, but the club still tried to offload him in 1906 for the princely sum of £250. There were no takers, and Fred was forced to ply his trade away from Football League spotlight. The next stop was Southern League club Brentford. As he waited on the station to depart Blackburn, players and fans, accompanied by the Palace Theatre Band, broke into a chorus of "For he's a jolly good fellow." It seemed Fred's career was slipping towards non-league oblivion, yet in 1908, Middlesbrough offered a second chance of First Division football. Fred grasped it with both hands, making 92 appearances from 1908 to 1912. Bagging 11 goals and collecting 5 England caps. It was his last hurrah. From there, the fag end of Fred's career smouldered in football's dimly lit basement. Halifax languished in the Midland League, Stoke in the Southern. As a player, he was good, but far from great. One sports writer reflected, "His blemish was a tendency towards over-elaboration." As a continental manager, that tendency towards over-elaboration would serve Fred well. Booting the ball up the field was not his style. His arrival on the national stage came after a bumpy ride.
After his playing days were ended by injury, Fred travelled to Berlin to learn his trade as a coach and by 1914 was at the helm of Germany's Olympic football team. A little thing called the Great War prevented him from seeing that job to completion. When the conflict broke out, Fred was interned in Ruhleben, a civilian detention camp where the 5,500 guests already included a number of football stars, with the likes of England's Sam Wolstenholme and Fred Spikesley, and Scotland's John Cameron among inmates. Fred became a football boss behind barbed wire. He had a pool of top former players at his disposal, the list also including Edwin Dutton, Germany, Steve Bloomer, England, and John Brearley, Spurs and Everton. As chairman of Ruhleben Football Association, he organised a full programme of matches. And in a move that has echoes of Sly Stallone's panned POW film Escape to Victory, assembled a World 11 squad. Fred was a big-time coach in custody. He returned home in 1918, married nurse Nanine Hayes. The couple had one daughter and a year later again packed his bags to manage AS Strasbourg. From there, he accepted the job of France's 1920 Olympic football team coach and steered the side to the semi-finals. Fred was a man prepared to travel for work and in 1920 began his 15-year stint in Spain with the top job at Racing de Santander. He'd also taken charge of Bilbao and Atletico Madrid before being forced back to Britain by the Spanish Civil War. Here, he swapped the magic and beauty of Spanish football for the mud and nettles standards of fourth division football with Barrow.
Fred died aged 78 on March 16, 1962, in the Dorset village of Litchett, Mare Travers. By then, England had all but forgotten his immense contribution to the modern game, In Spain, he remained a hero until the end. He will always be a legend. In 1959, Bilbao staged a testimonial match against Chelsea at St Mames in honour of the great man, and with thousands roaring every faltering step he took on the pitch, Fred kicked off the game. Gaiska Atska, president of Mr. Pentland Club, a British-based Athletic Bilbao supporters group, said, "You hear his name on the street and everyone knows it is a man with a bowler hat and a cigar. He has maintained the status of a myth or a legend. Remember this as you watch Euro 2024. The free-flowing passes, the intricate close-quarter ball play, it was all created by a man from Wolverhampton. Quite simply, Fred Pentland shaped the modern game. He invented it. And that's why every fan should raise his or her hat to Fred. Naturally, El Bombin would prefer it to be a bowler."
Now we have the quiz
answers
for this edition. Take it away, Roger.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello. Pop music question time. My name is Roger Brooks and I'm back with the answers to our pop music question, of which there were 12. Okay, off we go. Who had the hit single Baker Street? Well, that was Gerry Rafferty. Gerry Rafferty, who at one time was in a band in Scotland with Billy Connolly. Question two. She Flies Like a Bird in the Sky, Yai Yai. It was a hit for a Honeybus, the group, but it was used in a TV ad for what? Well, it was Nimble Bread, the bread that makes you slimmer, or something like that. Hence the floating images and flying like a bird in the sky. Question three. Who had a hit with Wichita Lineman? I am the lineman for the county. That was Glenn Campbell, who was also, before he became a popular hit singer with a string of huge hits, was a session musician and rated as one of the finest guitarists on the circuit at the time. Question four. Who was the oldest and who was the youngest Beatle? Well, Ringo was the oldest and George was the youngest. Question five. The answer is the Rocket Man. Rocket Man was the title of the Elton John biopic. The song I Just Called to Say I Love You was a hit for Stevie Wonder. Question seven. Winchester Cathedral, da 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 da, was a hit for that not quite so famous band, the New Vaudeville Band. That's so obscure. Come on, Roger, don't ask these obscure questions. I think anybody who gets that one deserves 3 points. Okay, eight. Listen, do you want to know a secret? Well, the secret was that it was Billy J. Kramer who had the single hit with that Beatles song. The lead singer with The Hollies, who also had, of course, a string of hits, was Alan Clark. Alan Clark. His best buddy, childhood friend, was Graham Nash, the one with the incredible high voice not going into falsetto. Question 10. An actor turned singer following his role in Camelot, where he had to do a bit of singing. Jimmy Webb wrote a song called MacArthur Park, about the icing flowing down in the rain, etc. Very deep lyrics for Richard Harris, the hell-raising Richard Harris. Question 11. What was the Beatles' first number one single? Well, their first single was Love Me Do, which didn't reach number one, but their first one to do so was From Me to You. That one. And anything odd you can think of about the song Something? Something in the Way She Moves attracts me like no other lover. Well, that was distinguished in a couple of ways. It was the first and only Beatles single to be written by George Harrison, not John and Paul. It was George's only single. And ironically, just to rub salt into the wound, Frank Sinatra used to introduce it, or once introduced it, till I guess somebody told him, as his favourite Lennon-McCartney song. George wouldn't have liked that. But I hope you liked our 12 pop questions.
TNS Soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!